Chapter 2. John Fitzgerald Kennedy entered the world on May 29, 1917, 4 years after Dorothy Kilgallen was born and 9 years before Marilyn Monroe's birthday. He was born in Brookline, Massachusetts, a wealthy suburb of Boston, the second of 9 children for Rose and Joseph Kennedy. According to a John F. Kennedy Presidential Library account, John was named in honor of Rose's father, John Francis Fitzgerald, the Boston mayor popularly known as Honey Fitz. Before long, family and friends called this small blue-eyed baby Jack. He was not a very healthy baby, and Rose recorded on his note card, she kept one for each child, the childhood diseases from which he suffered, such as whooping cough, measles, chicken pox. This susceptibility to ailments portended a future life packed with illness and injury for the youngster and man he would become. When John turned 3 years old, he was struck with scarlet fever. At the time, it was a very serious, life-threatening disease and very contagious. To his credit, Father Joe spent days and nights at the bedside of his son in a nearby hospital. Finally, after 4 weeks, John's condition improved and the scare was over. Shortly thereafter, the Kennedys moved to a new home a few blocks from their previous residence. By then, Joe had boundless aspirations, telling friends he would be worth $1 million by the time he was 35. The new home had 12 rooms, turreted windows, and a big porch. By the time 5 more years had passed, Jack had 6 siblings, older brother Joe, 4 sisters, Rosemary, Kathleen, Eunice, and Patricia, and a younger brother, Robert. Jean and Teddy hadn't been born yet. Rose employed housekeepers and nannies to help with raising the children. Summers for the Kennedy clan were spent at Hyannisport in the family beach home. Unlike either Marilyn or Dorothy, Jack grew up in an atmosphere of wealth, since Papa Joe had established himself as a savvy businessman. Where Marilyn suffered being shipped from household to household as basically an orphan, and Kilgallen grew up in a middle-income family, Jack never lacked for anything and grew up amidst good times. Joe Sr. did insist on the boys winning at any form of competition from an early age onward, whether it was swimming, sailing, or playing touch football. While racing Joe Jr. on a bicycle, young Jack fell and suffered more than 20 stitches. At Choate, a boarding school in Wallingford, Connecticut, Jack, now a teenager, pleased his father by playing several sports, including tennis, basketball, football, and golf. His close friend Lem Billings recalls that the handsome young man had a clever individualist mind. This quick mind, however, did not translate into proper grades, disappointing Joe to no end. Such feelings on the part of the family patriarch apparently prompted, according to a JFK account, a long letter to his second oldest son. "Now, Jack, I don't want to give the impression that I am a nagger. For goodness knows, I think that is the worst thing any parent can be. And I also feel that, you know, if I didn't really feel you had the goods, I would be most charitable in my attitude toward your failings. After long experience in sizing up people, I definitely know you have the goods and you can go a long way. It is very difficult to make up fundamentals that you have neglected when you were very young, and that is why I am urging you to do the best you can. I am not expecting too much, and I will not be disappointed if you don't turn out to be a real genius, but I think you can be a really worthwhile citizen with good judgment and understanding." At that time, however, Jack had other aspirations than being a really worthwhile citizen with good judgment and understanding. According to journalist and New York Times best-selling author Alexis Coe in a 2017 Town and Country magazine article entitled "Portrait of a Troublemaker, A Rare Glimpse of John F. Kennedy's Life at Boarding School," the following episode summed up the young Kennedy's propensity for fun and games while at Choate, where he had been admitted, despite failing the school's entrance exam for Latin, twice. Aided by the Sons of America's most influential families, young Jack, then a student at Choate, had successfully snuck firecrackers onto his elite boarding school's Wallingford, Connecticut campus and headed straight for the bathroom. That morning, during the obligatory daily assembly, long-suffering headmaster George St. John held up the defenseless victim, a badly injured toilet seat, for all to see. St. John railed against the muckers, as he labeled the culprits, which Jack took to heart, though not in the way the headmaster likely intended. Inspired, the future president named his band of first-class troublemakers the Choate Muckers Club. Coe, who discovered that young Kennedy's IQ was 119, then added a quote from Earl Linebach, the housemaster at Kennedy's dorm, who stated, "What makes the whole problem more difficult is Jack's winning smile and charming personality." The journalist then posited, "Jack proved to be an immensely frustrating, totally irresistible high school student, a confusing combination of the school's faculty and administration." Adding to the lore of the Choate student Kennedy, Coe uncovered the fact that during his sophomore year, Jack developed a lifelong love of Robert Frost. This was the same poet who recited The Gift Outright at his 1961 presidential inauguration. Coe reported that Jack's bouts with serious illness, which would trouble his body to the day he died, had begun in earnest in 1933 when he was 16. Leukemia was the diagnosis, but tests were confusing, and during the summer of 1934, Jack landed at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota. Coe's research didn't deal with this illness, but instead focused on Choate. She added another quote from the headmaster. "He was the best-informed boy of the year," noting he was the only one who personally subscribed to the New York Times, probably because his father was rich enough to pay for it. Unfortunately, journalist Coe fell prey to many oversights, telling only part of the story, as have so many others who distort history. During the final portion of her article, she correctly indicated that when Jack graduated from Choate, he was voted most likely to succeed, and that he wrote, in jest, "May we room together at Sing Sing Prison," on graduation photos, but Coe completely left out the fact that at one point during this time, Jack was withdrawn from Choate altogether. Either this was an example of the sloppy research that taints much of what has been written about Kennedy's past, or Coe deliberately left out Jack's leaving Choate for a less-than-truth story she must have assumed would garner a sensationalist headline without that critical information provided to the reader. To discover a much more credible account, Coe had only to read a portion of the excellent biography of Rose Kennedy, entitled Rose, The Life and Times of Rose Fitzgerald Kennedy, by New York Times best-selling author Charles Higham, and published by Simon & Schuster in 1995. Drawing on more than 400 interviews with primary sources, Higham, the author of biographies of Howard Hughes, Katharine Hepburn, and Dorothy Kilgallen's friend Joan Crawford, presented, thankfully, a warts-and-all book, providing insight into the Kennedy family from Rose's perspective. Unlike her watered-down autobiography, Times to Remember, Higham captures the essence of a crusted woman who had to be tough in order to put up with a boisterous husband like Joe Sr. Confirming the validity of his research in an author's note where he lists primary sources such as diary entries and Mrs. Kennedy's letters, Higham spares the reader all of Joe Sr.'s dalliances, save for his throwing famed actress, his mistress, Gloria Swanson, into Rose's face. But the Kennedy patriarch, as well as sons Joe Jr. and Jack, did take some heavy punches in Higham's book. As for the future president, there is a balance between the good, the bad, and the stupid, and the man who would become known as JFK qualified in each category. Author's note, despite considerable research, there appears to be no definitive answer as to exactly when John Kennedy first became known as JFK. Higham did not make the same mistakes Coe made when his research produced evidence of Rose's disappointment that Jack was even sloppier than his brother Joe Jr., who, she had learned, was messy, untidy, with a typically boyish lack of discipline in terms of clothing and shoes. Exasperated, Rose yanked Jack out of Choate in September 1929 and herded him off to Canterbury, which Higham described as a cheerless institution at New Milford, Connecticut. Regarding JFK's days at Canterbury, Higham wrote, "Jack hated the school. He wrote to his mother expressing homesickness. He complained of excessive amounts of religious study, bitter cold, and severe discipline. He was irritated by the catechisms and religious talks, as well as, conversely, by irreligious activities, most notably theft, especially since thieves took his sweatshirt, his $5 birthday gifts, his fountain pens, and his pillows." According to Higham, Joe Sr., still intent on returning Jack to Choate, wrote to the assistant headmaster, suggesting that his wayward son, still earning only mediocre marks, might benefit from a tutor prior to being admitted again. Instantly, the headmaster agreed, and young Kennedy began working with Bruce Belmore, Jack's Hyannisport tutor. From Higham's account, through Rose's eyes, there is no doubt that both Rose and Joe Sr. believed Joe Jr. was the one who would rise to stardom, not Jack. This is the most insightful part of Higham's account, and one the journalist and author Coe completely missed. Higham wrote that Rose had disappointment with Jack compared with her paragon oldest son. Joe Jr., whose good looks would later be compared with those of swashbuckling actor Errol Flynn and dramatic actor Robert Taylor, was not only muscular and athletic, but was a good mixer and destined to be president. By contrast, as Higham states, Rose viewed Jack as sickly, a hard worker but fragile, with a well-proportioned but thin physique that failed to compensate for his inherited good looks. Higham also notes the disadvantage that Jack suffered from the effects of the slight spinal curvature at birth. One leg was shorter than the other, that caused him much pain. This condition resulted in several trips to Boston for treatment. Meanwhile, Higham noted that the marital relationship, specifically in the sexual arena, between Joe and Rose appeared to have soured. He writes, "It is certain that Rose, who was pregnant again, made the difficult decision to withdraw permanently from the marriage bed. Joe Sr. would, in future, occupy a separate bedroom." The author might have added separate living quarters to the equation, as this transpired later on. Regardless, with the help of the tutor, Jack became a student more worthy of Choate, and finally, in July 1931, he re-entered the school. This brought both parents, Higham wrote, relief and pleasure. Continuing his insight into Jack's early years, Higham reported that, despite his lack of muscle and his constitutional fragility, he proved to be a normal, agile, quick, and spunky schoolboy. He could do a flying tackle on the football field with the best of them. He enjoyed seeing his target writhe in agony on the ground. The author then exposed the fact that young Jack once fainted during Mass but concluded the service without a grumble. And, in a tribute to Jack's memory, Higham wrote that he devoured his favorite novel, Sir Walter Scott's Ivanhoe, and was able to rattle off passages to anyone who would listen. All of this was a pleasure to Rose. Concerning Jack's first encounters with serious illness, Higham pointed out that he suffered abdominal pains, had an inflamed appendix, and had to undergo an operation in May 1931 when he was 14. Regardless, Jack finally graduated from Choate, finishing 65th in a class of 110, and entered Harvard in 1936, where Joe Jr. was already a student. However, one look at his Choate report card affixed to his Harvard application proves Jack was anything but a solid candidate. One teacher wrote, "I'm afraid it would be almost foolishly optimistic to expect anything but the most mediocre from Jack. strongly suggesting the Kennedy good name and Joe Sr.'s influence were the main reason he was accepted. Harvard had accepted him, and like his brother Joe, Jack played football. He was not as good an athlete as Joe Jr., but he was determined to succeed. Listed at 6'1" and 163 pounds, Jack played end for Harvard's freshman and junior varsity football teams. The freshman coach said, "The most adept pass catcher was John Kennedy, but his lack of weight was a drawback." Unfortunately, during his junior year, Jack ruptured a disc in his spine. He never really recovered from this accident, and his back continued to bother him for the rest of his life. To better understand the John Kennedy who later became president, it is imperative that one fully understand John F. Kennedy the man, who was besieged throughout his adult life with not only the back issues, but serious illnesses. For instance, at Choate, Higham reported that Jack was stricken with another mysterious illness, which was later alleged to be a granulocytic angina, a form of blood destruction occurring in the presence of severe infection or exposure to toxic chemicals. To convey the danger and possible loss of life, Higham wrote, "It caused spots, ulceration, and gangrene of the mouth and larynx, and resulted in fever and prostration, a loss of red corpuscles, and an increase of white. It could recur, and recovery was very rare. Only after experiencing a very slow recovery was the young Kennedy able to meet his family in Florida." As if Rose wasn't having enough nightmares about her son Jack during this time, her worry as a mother was compounded, Higham reported, by the actions of 18-year-old Joe Jr. Against his mother's wishes, he traveled to Nazi Germany, and, according to the author, she was upset by the letters he sent home, which reflected the commonplace anti-Semitism of the day, echoing the familiar Hitler argument that the Jews, running big business in Berlin, had been responsible for Germany's woes. One may only guess what Rose thought when her oldest son said in one letter that if he were a German, he would heil Hitler. Meanwhile, according to Boston Globe journalist Nick DaCosta Clippa, Joe Jr. managed to hit the social scene while attending Harvard as the chairman of what was, in essence, a party planning committee during his freshman year. Officially, the group was known as the Freshman Smoker Committee, and it was tasked with organizing a big annual class party in the spring. According to the program of the May 1938 party, the Smoker, organized by Kennedy, featured two jazz orchestras as well as free food, tobacco, and ginger ale. All the while, Joe Jr. was the apple of his father's eye, to the extent that the Kennedy patriarch had pegged him to be the first Catholic president of the United States, perhaps because Jack had lost his first stab at being elected to office when he failed in an attempt to become freshman class president in 1940. No matter, he joined student associations and showed great interest in government and history classes, though his grades remained average. During this time, remarked Higham, Jack seemed to be possessed of a normal amount of teenage lust, his tongue as filthy as one could expect. At age 20, Jack, along with Joe Jr., remained behind when their father was appointed U.S. ambassador to the United Kingdom. This piqued Jack's interest in world affairs. A visit to his father that summer increased that interest before he returned to Harvard, but Joe Sr. still set his sights on Joe Jr. as the future politician. He planned on him first running for Congress, then the Senate, and then a final ascent to the White House. What is often forgotten is that while Ambassador Joe Sr. sent letters to his sons in the U.S. about the threat of a world war due to the actions of Adolf Hitler in Germany and Benito Mussolini in Italy, he never publicly criticized either Hitler or Mussolini, and in fact, his actions gave the impression that he was pacifying Hitler. Joe's view toward these fascists resulted in his paying a steep price, putting, as will be explained, an end to his aspirations to become U.S. president himself. At the same time, Jack was writing his senior thesis, in which he questioned whether England was ready if war with the Nazis broke out, later published as Why England Slept. When German forces marched across Poland in September 1939, World War II began. Jack, at age 22, graduated from Harvard and afterward cherished a cable which read, "Two things I always knew about you. One, that you are smart, and two, that you are a swell guy. Love, Dad."